Thanks, Eric. Why does Trudeau and the media claim that a group of truckers are racist and misogynistic?
Race, gender, and sexuality are central to their worldview. So this is what I would call cultural socialism or left modernism. And so sacred values are anti-racism, anti-sexism, and anti-homophobia. And they are looking for any way to attach these sacred values to the drama that's playing out, even if it doesn't belong. They're desperate to find these sorts of connections in order to validate a particular worldview. For these people, Canada is this progressive multicultural paradise, and what they're identifying against is that bad old white settler male misogynist culture.
You're highlighting that at its core, the conflict is about what it means to be Canadian. But this isn't what the truckers were focusing on. The truckers wanted to end the vaccine and isolation requirements for crossing the border. And why do the truckers freak out the Canadian elites? Why did Trudeau go hiding in a cabin in the woods?
Well, I mean, this demographic, rural white working class, is rarely seen in an urban protest. The big rigs are kind of frightening if you're just used to sort of sipping a latte in a cafe and looking at Priuses. I don't know how genuine the fear is or how much that is contrived and performative. These truckers were draped in the Canadian flag.
It's interesting that you focus on the Canadian flag because the media focused on an isolated swastika and Confederate flag as their symbol of choice.
There were media stories suggesting that this was using that flag in a dishonest way that was disguising their true motives, that essentially they would all be waving the Confederate and Nazi flags. I think the tone really was one that, hey, you're kind of smearing this by using it.
Eric, in your book, White Shift, you discuss the idea of Canada as a nation state. The elites are uncomfortable with the white English origin of the nation and prefer an open society that could take in millions of people from around the world with open immigration. This is some kind of post-nationalism, looking for a multicultural country. I would have thought that meant de-emphasizing national symbols like the Canadian flag.
Well, in a way, that is the logical end point, I suppose, of an anti-national philosophy of the kind that Trudeau is an example of. I mean, what some would call Leninism, not Leninism, but John Lennonism.
I've never heard of that before.
If you listen to Trudeau say, you know, Canada has no core culture or identity, that idea of a post-national construct is very central to what he's about. Ironically, that's a kind of nationalism. Now, it's an unstable one because its endpoint is the erasing of national identity. Assuming that doesn't happen anytime soon, what it's about is saying, hey, we are advancing this post-national ideal further than anybody else. We're the most virtuous, and that's a form of pride we as Canadians have. So bizarrely, it is a form of nationalism, peculiarly, but which aims ultimately to probably erase the boundaries of nations. And then we have a trucker convoy, which is really probably more representative of the way a lot of Canada is. But it's the bad old Canada, and it's coming to town, and it's reminding them of the other that they're trying to suppress and get rid of. All of these largely white working class people coming into town in their big rigs is very much a personification of everything that is not kind of multicultural woke Canada.
The Ottawa truckers' actions reminds me of the uprising by the Yellow Jackets in France, where French working class people, including truckers, took to the streets outside of Paris and demanded change to a specific government policy related to the price of oil. And the Yellow Jackets, they were viewed in complete disbelief by the French Parisian elites. And when the Macron government tried to speak with their leadership, they couldn't find them because it was a spontaneous, decentralized movement.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there's a lot that's similar there. The kind of, I won't say entirely leaderless, but heavily decentralized nature of the process. It's a sort of blue-collar protest against elites. And in a way, there's a libertarian element to both, one group wanting not to have very high fuel prices and the other arguing against vaccine mandates.
Another similarity is the type of people that participate in this public protest. In America, we had the Tea Party took to the streets, wrapping themselves in the American flag. The elites were in shock that these people even existed. And how dare these yahoos interfere with my travel plans to my weekend estate?
You're actually right that the reaction is in common. The only thing that I would say is that there's a real double standard depending on who is causing them grief. So if it's BLM in Native Aboriginal Pipeline protest or their supporters, then it's a very different reaction. Is it something that the elite can identify as part of our vision of this kind of utopian multicultural Canada, or does it represent the other? And let's face it also, and there's been studies on this, that urban protest is largely a progressive left activity. Very rarely do you get conservative groups protesting in significant numbers.
Trudeau and Macron reacted quite differently to these street protests. Macron tried to find common ground and quickly change his policies, while Trudeau is ready to apply martial law.
I think that's right. Macron is not woke. He's said many things that have got him attacked by the progressive left. He talks tough on immigration. Trudeau is really much different. Trudeau is sort of full throttle, 100%. We're going to have as high immigration as we can. Everybody's a racist and misogynist. He sort of never misses an opportunity to dress in foreign attire. He's talking about Canada having no identity.
There seems to be a fight between the Canadian elites, who want unlimited immigration and oppose a national identity, and the working class Canadians, who want limited immigration and think positively of the nation and its symbols.
When I grew up in Canada in the 80s and 90s, there was nothing but French versus English. And that's kind of been the theme through Canadian history. That's largely, I won't say it's gone, but it's much, much more muted. These new cleavages around multiculturalism versus nationalism. The American-style divides are becoming much more important. Quebec's electoral landscape is now quite different. The separatists are down in the low 30s. The separatist threat from Saskatchewan and Alberta is higher than in Quebec. I think that's kind of a metaphor for the kinds of conflicts that are going to be gripping Canada going forward.
How does partisanship explain the public reaction to Trudeau's handling of the Ottawa truckers?
Conservative voters are about split on the protest. So it's not that sort of very defining partisan issue. However, views on Trudeau's handling of it do have the capacity to become much more of that kind of issue. Even amongst Liberal and NDP voters, only half of them give Trudeau a passing grade. So it's opinion toward Trudeau that really polarizes Canadians on party lines.
Canada has a much higher vaccination rate than the U.S. The Canadian truckers are 90% vaccinated. So why is the Trudeau government doubling down on this group of workers? They've won. Why are they turning this into a fight?
There's a symbolic aspect to this. Mask mandates have been sucked into politics of progressive versus conservative in North America. And I think Trudeau's framing this as you've got anti-vax racist misogynists on the one hand, and then you have a moral progressive Canadians on the other. With this secondary drama around the meaning of Canada, around progressivism, and this binary dichotomy between the good and the bad.
Why do you think that in the U.S., there is real anger against whites who do not vaccinate, but there's little venom for minorities?
You make a very good point. I mean, the Sikhs around Vancouver, they have a higher rate of non-vaccination. And that is simply something that will get minimal attention, or if it does get attention, it's framed in such a way as, oh, well, this is very much understandable because they have been racialized, therefore they don't trust, when it is a group that can be identified with that progressive multicultural utopia we're building with our sacred values, then it's a completely different attitude to anti-vax than towards the legacy population that we're trying to get past that represent the other to our project. The sort of reaction is much more on this symbolic level about what Canada represents and who represents the forces of darkness and the forces of progress. The other important thing to point out, by the way, is that roughly 60% of the English Canadian electorate is voting for the left versus only 40% for a right-wing party, whereas in most countries such as Britain or the U.S., it's more like 50-50. And because it's 60-40, there are all kinds of electoral incentives to be crazier left than the other parties. What Trudeau needs to do is to eat into the NDP vote by appealing to the woke left while sort of tacking economically to the center.
Last week, we had a discussion of the Joe Rogan controversy and his podcast with Robert Malone, who challenges the vaccine orthodoxy. And that blew up. And simultaneously, Rogan was called a racist.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is all about us and them. And it's the them or the other being defined on the basis of being white male working class other, right? Rogan is slotted into that binary. he may have only ticked one box around anti-vax, but the other stuff attaches to him. Misogyny and racism just automatically. It's all part of a package. Because race and gender and sexuality are the sacred values, they have to be invoked wherever possible. You can stretch the evidence just so that you can invoke those powerful taboos about the violation and profanation of the sacred. So yeah, I think that is the common denominator here in this woke ideology.
You can't keep using the same taboos over and over again, because if you call everyone a racist or a misogynist, then it loses its power. Are we reaching that tipping point yet?
Yeah, I think it has all kinds of downstream ramifications. One of the downstream ramifications is that you may mobilize the other side. They react. Trudeau's abuse of the truckers could be like the deplorables moment with Hillary Clinton. In Britain, you had Gordon Brown talk about the bigoted woman, that Gillian Duffy incident. These sorts of incidents seem to create powerful narratives which tend to mobilize populists. Canada has these extremely strong politically correct taboos. You cannot talk about immigration levels. We know from the European case and also the Trump case, that simply means that the mainstream Conservative Party can't touch immigration, which opens room for a populist right party like the PPC. Now, in Canada, because of several generations of indoctrination into multiculturalism and so on, the population has shifted. It is 60% on the left, and inventing Canada as a left-wing country. The backlash is, okay, they're not going to win power, but what they are going to do is entrench polarization, and that could show up in a vitriolic level of public debate that we're seeing now.
Positive feedback loops from protests. The BLM movement was successful in one city, and it spread like wildfire nationwide. Same with the Yellow Jackets in France. Do you think the Ottawa truckers could serve as an example for anti-vaccine mandates across Canada and potentially North America?
There are going to be copycats. There's no doubt about it. But whether this can sustain itself the way the Yellow Jackets did, I guess I'm skeptical. I just don't think the level of public support is there. COVID and the pandemic, let's say it fades in 6 months. This issue's then gone from the public space, and all of the populism that's been built upon that narrow issue will dissipate.
Immigration.
Immigration, which is much more durable, and the question of the future of the nation, even the class divide, that's much more durable.
You're a professor at the University of London. Tell us about Boris Johnson and Partygate.
It's really tough. You talk to people here, and different people say he's done, other people say he isn't. I think it's all going to be down to the polls and what happens in the sort of local elections in May. If his polling remains poor and the party gets thumped at the local elections, I think he's out. If, however, he hangs on and somehow the local elections aren't as bad as people think, because one of the things that's been happening is there's been a big change in the polls, so the Tories are now behind Labour. But what's happened is a lot of those Tory voters and the old Brexit voters have simply gone into apathy. They haven't gone to Labour. And there's a question about if it came to a contest with Labour in a general election, would they hold their nose and vote for Johnson? Probably a lot of them would. We just don't know the exact number. He was the politician that got Brexit done. So he got good marks for that. He has been given reasonably good marks by the electorate for his handling of the pandemic. I don't think people fault him substantively. The problem is he campaigned as he's the guy who represents the little guy against the corrupt elite. And then he turns around and he's got all these parties. He's refurbishing his apartment with all this fancy stuff and spending. So in a way, he came across as sort of high-handed and elitist when he was supposed to be the populist.
I end each episode on a note of optimism. Eric, what are you optimistic about?
What am I optimistic about? I'm optimistic that this pandemic is going to fade in 6 months or sooner. I am sick of it, and it would be nice to talk about something else.